Fabulous with Vibs and Vicky, the Think Shift podcast for professionals who aspire to be fabulous leaders, those who not only succeed but also purposefully seek to reinvent the world.
Vibs, it's so good to be with you again today, and I'm excited. We're going to dive into a topic that is prevalent in many of our societies, and it's taking up, frankly, a lot of mental space given the complexity and the unknown. Today, we're going to be discussing AI and its impact on our jobs. Many of us experience some degree of low-grade anxiety when we think about this topic. Others are yet downright panicked by the idea and what it's going to do to our jobs. And yet others see it as this exciting opportunity with a way of making a huge amount of money. Some of us have a whole combination of those thoughts running through our minds. So today we're going to dive into how to think about this topic so that you have a broader, more fabulous perspective. So Vibs, let's start with, well, what even is AI? You know, I think we all think we know with ChatGPT, but, you know, is that all there is to AI?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's what we want to talk about right now, I guess. The world wants to talk about right now. That's probably where our attention is most. I think probably where I would probably go with this is, I think the reason why we're struggling with AI in terms of defining it and is it's kind of like a general purpose technology that's just going to proliferate through. It's still evolving and it's going to proliferate through everything that we do, whether we realize it or not. And I think when you have something that general purpose, the applications are so big and the categories are so wide. I mean, you mentioned about in the context of work, but, you know, I'm sure we've got people who are going to listen to this that are worried about, you know, Skynet and the killer robots taking over too, right? There's so many ways you can look at this. But to answer your question, I think what's emerging is this kind of categorization of different types of AI and or categories of AI. And the first one is, you know, what we call sort of narrow AI or weak AI. And pretty much everything that we think of AI today, including things like ChatGPT and the recently renamed Bard, which is now Gemini Ultra as of, I think, yesterday. You know, these are all these huge, large language models and image recognition models and so forth that are being trained to be able to mimic activity, language, creation of assets that are fed on just extraordinary amounts of data, which allow them to then create and produce and automate in ways that have never been, or at least historically have never been possible before. But that narrow AI also includes 20 years ago, the initial AI systems that were beating, chess grandmasters. You know, Gary Kasparov got beaten by an IBM's AI system. And, you know, you had Google's AI system that beat Go, you know, won at Go. You know, those, it's kind of almost like an evolution of that. But I think because it's allowing us to do things in a much more natural language kind of way, the applications have suddenly exploded. The way we could use it has suddenly exploded. But in the context of AI, though, that's still narrow AI, yeah? And so meaning, you know, this train's got a long, long, long way to run in the, you know, in the years and decades ahead. The second category is, you know, what's referred to as general AI or strong AI. And this is kind of the stuff of sci-fi movies. This is the This is the androids. This is the Datas of the world.
This is where people get panicked.
Yeah, yeah. This is the Datas of the world if you're a Star Trekker. This is the looking, well, not necessarily just looking, the general intelligence comparable to a human intelligence. So not just regurgitation and creation, but this is like, this person can do anything, like this thing can kind of interact with us on anything in a way that's very natural and very human. Not just the language is naturally human, but everything about it is natural and human. So we're kind of a long way from that. This is where, you know, this is the stuff of Blade Runner, where you can't tell, you know, where you can't tell one from the other kind of thing. Okay, that kind of, and I'm exaggerating to illustrate a point, but it's much more general purpose AI. And I'm sure we're further along than maybe we'd like to think, or some of us would like to think we are, but it's still largely theoretical and there's no large scale application of that. It's that's some ways off. We're talking 5, 10, 15 years down the road, really, at least. Okay. But then there's the third category, which is the one that freaks everyone out completely. This is the super intelligent AI. This is the full human levels of creativity and wisdom. But even things like, you know, being able to reason. This is where we're worried that, you know, machines being conscious, and now they're able to, like, you know, maybe they'll come to the conclusion that humans are the worst thing that's ever happened to the planet, and, you know, let's just get rid of them, right? There's that kind of thing. Now we're in the land of, you know, HAL from sort of 2001, or Skynet from Terminator. And it conjures up this kind of, you know, robots are gonna, you know, the robots are gonna take over. You know, it's that kind of this consciousness that starts transcending us. And this is, I think, it's a great place to go from a thought experiment point of view. And we need ethicists and technologists. But now you get into really, you know, deep philosophical topics about, you know, what is consciousness? And, you know, are we really conscious, or is it just an illusion? And, you know, all sorts of things that probably most of our audience is probably not going to want to get into. But I still think it's a good categorization to have, because so most of the time when we are talking about it, we are using the phrase AI, at least in the working environment, to talk predominantly about narrow AI. It's really just the progression of dumb chatbots to more intelligent chatbots and creation engines. And I'm not trying to diminish its importance and role, but it's still category one. Still profound.
So Phipps,
still profound.
So Phipps, it feels like, you know, with that framing, then for, you know, the next 1 to 3 years, there's no real reason to be panicked just yet. So if we think about the broad applications of it for the next 1 to 3 years, how are you seeing it being of value and changing the way things will be over the short-term horizon?
Yeah, it's kind of funny though, right? Because I guess people get panicked about all sorts of things, right? So I guess people will get panicked. And there's probably some good reason. There's probably a good reason to be, well, it's an understandable emotional response is probably the way I would describe it. I can totally see how some folks would be more panicked than others. I guess the way I think about it is, because it's very hard to predict all the areas in which we're all going to be finding ourselves using AI-based tools. In fact, I'll be using an AI-based tool to edit this podcast immediately after recording. Okay, so it's proliferating into everything that we do all the time anyway. And, you know, I don't know. I think just this week, Google announced the availability of Gemini Ultra, which is basically going to bolt onto all of your Google apps. And Microsoft did something with Copilot, which is now bundled into all your, you know, all the applications that you use. And, you know, people who've been using coding tools have been doing this for several months and maybe years by now. So, you know, it's just going to be everywhere. It's going to be
everywhere. In the land of photography, you've got the different cameras, like the 360 cameras that have the AI.
Yeah, you've got designers generating their own AI images so it can be royalty free. You've got, I mean, closer to home, you've got, you know, copy being written for websites, and, you know, with a couple of prompts and a click rather than, you know, the skill that was required to write something like that before. I'm not proud to say this, but I've actually experimented with writing a review for someone purely using, it's probably better than the review I would have written myself. At least it got 80% of the way there. So my value add became much more on the editing and the nuance of what the human needed to hear rather than the actual text production itself, which is, you know, for a dyslexic person, a beautiful thing. But it does mean that an activity that would have taken an hour took about 20 minutes, but the composition of the actual value was, in my opinion, better, but it fundamentally changed what the activity, what it meant to do that thing. Okay. So anyway, so I think we're going to see this pervading everywhere. But if you put that kind of time horizon on it, Vicky, I think we have to just explore the kind of the things that we kind of see it already and just see it more as an accelerant. Like, we're going to see more of it. So I think you're going to see it more and more and more in healthcare. For sure, at least in the US, telemedicine, remote monitoring, automatic detection of tumors and conditions and that kind of stuff. Just the fact that we got sensors on us. I'm thinking I'm wearing two sensors right now. Okay, we got sensors on us.
Yeah, I heard an example yesterday of someone's pacemaker stopping, and then their device ended up calling the paramedics to come and help.
Which sounds wonderful, right? I mean, which, you know, there's so many good things that this stuff's doing. There's also some terrifying things that this stuff's doing. Like, you know, let's take that scenario and, okay, it might help that person out. But, you know, there's going to be AI systems that know about that. And it's going to affect your insurance premium for your car insurance, you know, in an upward. I mean, yeah, that's what there's. And we could talk about privacy all day long, but, you know, these are complex. One thing's for sure. We're only going to figure out the rules and the ethics and the laws and everything else way after the horses left the stable, because humans just aren't good at doing that stuff until after it's been exploited in bad ways. At least not in America. Okay. So I think we got that kind of issue. So I think you're going to see it in healthcare, personal health trackers, wearables. I think you're just going to see predicting health issues earlier. You know, you use that example, even just, you know, you look like you're about to pass out kind of stuff. I just think it's just going to be more around us constantly. And I think it's going to become, it's probably going to need less, and it's going to be more around us in the senses around us, not just the ones on our body, if you will. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you're going to see it in things like, you know, these voice assistants are just going to get excruciatingly, and they're all getting very good now, but Siri's a little bit far behind, but some of them are really, really good. And they're just going to get better and better and better and better and better as we sort of transition to more and more and more voice interaction with our computers. Home automation, more smart. You know, that world, I know it sounds trivial, but that's a stepping stone towards managing energy more efficiently, particularly in urban areas. It's a way of taking pressure off the grid. It's a way of moving us more towards sustainability. You know, there's a whole host of those sorts of things that these are, like, in my opinion, like building blocks, building towards. Transport, logistics, all of those sorts of things. More and more semi-autonomous vehicles. Traffic management is going to be driven by AI a lot more rather than simple algorithms. When I say simple, it's actually very complex. But it's complex in a way that can still be replaced by AI. Read shopping. You know, I mean, you know, Amazon have probably set the bar with that, with just, you know, walk-in, walk-out type technology. But that's just going to get, you know, you're going to see more and more and more augmented reality type, fitting to your body type things. You know, AI is going to be able to predict your sizes, what colors look good on you, a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, we'll tend to think of as things that we consult human beings for, maybe, which we won't have to do anymore. Yeah, that sort of stuff. I think we'll see it more. Inventory management, you know, which is I think about these sorts of things a lot, even financial services. You know, I think I'm gonna say something that might upset some people. Most financial advisors are actually pretty transactional. It's the same kind of advice they give to multiple clients, right? That's not to say it's bad. It's just much of the same for most people, okay? Well, that's probably quite replaceable. And so you're going to have to be really, really good at your value add above and beyond what the systems are telling you. Otherwise, you know, that's going to be an issue. Fraud detection, hopefully that gets better. But I imagine fraud creation will get increasingly sophisticated too. The race, you know, those sorts of things I think we'll see more and more of. You know, right now, for example, I think it's still relatively easy, if you're technically proficient, to tell when something is fake, you know, like a fake email or a fake
phishing.
That's going to get harder and harder and harder to tell the difference. It's going to get, you know, and that's before we get into copying people's voices and what that has the ability to do, not just, you know, to our whole fabric of the way our political system functions. I mean, there are whole sorts of implications down the road for that sort of thing. But closer, those are closer. Learning. I think we got personalized learning opportunities in a way that we just never had before. I think it's going to really shake the foundations of what we think is high quality learning.
In a good way.
Hopefully in a cheaper way, if you happen to have education in the States, in particularly college education in the States. But yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, the idea of personalized medicine, if you like, can also be applied to personalized learning. Okay. And then, you know, suddenly, you know, the quality of your teachers and your professors and what you learn, or what's important to learn from humans, starts changing a lot. I think we're going to see different types of skills become important, not just the technical ones, but the human ones, the ones that are harder to replicate with technology. Anything that is transactional. Work, you know, I call it workplace productivity, but, you know, I joke sometimes, and again, this is a podcast, so we can do this in a little bit of jest, but, you know, when we say things like workplace productivity and collaboration tools and assistance with processes, right, what we're really saying is a bunch of people manually doing a bunch of stuff that don't need to be doing it anymore, and you can just automate it away.
Anything that's repetitive.
Anything that's repetitive. And the reality is, most people like repetitive jobs because the repetitive jobs give you the greatest potential to have, you know, tight work-life separation. You know, most people don't want careers. They want jobs and then go and do their thing. Like, it won't be most of our listeners, but it will be. I mean, that is a huge proportion of the working population. And I don't think we should look down our nose at that. She recognized that is going to be a huge challenge, societal challenge. And I think where I think it's going to hit the road in our world, in the professional world a lot, is, quite frankly, there's lots of very expensive people doing repetitive things that the economic case for them to be replaced with cheaper people and few of them doing higher or fewer of them doing higher value stuff and a new wave of automation it's already started. And that's, I think, where the fear comes from that you were alluding. It's because I think even if people don't understand it, they can viscerally tell when they go into ChatGPT and they ask it to do something and it does it for them in 3.5 seconds. And it's like, oh my God, I would have done, you know, it would have taken me an hour or that would have taken me 45 minutes. You know, viscerally, you know that, hold on a second, what does that mean for me? And I think drives a lot of the emotion and fear around this. And the problem is when you're thinking like that, you tend not to see all of the opportunities that are going to get created, all of the new jobs that are going to be created. I mean, I'm not, it's going to be painful, no question. But it does represent an opportunity for people too, as well.
So it sounds like, at its core, it's going to make things accessible, more productive, easier, where things weren't possible before at that narrow 1 to 3 year band. And VIPS, part of our brand is to create a fabulous environment where people can contribute meaningfully, feel good about their experience at work. And a lot of that's going to change as you've been talking and sharing the different dimensions. So I'm curious, you know, what do you see is going to be valuable in the future? You know, we've typically thought that our value comes from information and our expertise. And we live in this information age. What's going to change fundamentally in the next narrow time horizon with regards to AI?
Yeah, I think probably we look at it at two levels, right? I think the kind of things that are likely to change, and then also from a leadership point of view, what kind of generalization can we make about what constitutes value going forward at a more general level? So, you know, I think in terms of what's going to be kind of impacted, if you like, I mean, there is going to be an entirely new wave of increased automation. And that's why I think, you know, sometimes when you talk to people who don't really understand what AI is and how quickly it can learn and adapt and change and so forth, it's very easy to think it's just another efficiency drive that drives more automation and we've been doing it forever, okay? But I think that kind of thing is really important. So I think the low-skill jobs, highly predictable jobs, repetitive tasks, that's there's a big chunk of that is just going to go away. There will be displacement in those areas. And there's no getting around that. So then I think there is a transformation of existing jobs. It's another category where the kind of jobs, they don't go away, but what they are changes. Like I use the example of doing the performance review, right? The job of writing a performance review didn't go away, but what it meant to do a performance review, the actual work was different. It was editing and nuance and the things that provoked the right thoughts and the right judgment call became a lot more important than the actual task of writing. That's a silly example of an activity, but think about things like...
But it'd be, you know, as you're talking, it'll be the same, you know, managers and leaders often spend an inordinate amount of time writing job descriptions because they need to get graded at a certain level so they can bring in people at the right level within the organization to have the impact. And, you know, the words, the way you phrase things, how to attract somebody, it's a painful, painful process that I haven't met a manager or leader that enjoys. That now there are tools out there that are providing, like if you're trying to say this, you can say it in these four or five different ways, and then you pick and then tune it to, well, what would make someone really successful in this role versus not, as opposed to just the activities that they need to be doing.
Yeah, and in our language, what it really says is, you know, we've historically always talked about personal power as something you should grow and build over time. What it's really going to do is it's going to mean that your personal power is going to become a lot more important earlier on in your career, which then takes us to the place of, you know, how do we get people to a higher level of self-confidence, a higher level of critical thinking, a higher level of emotional intelligence earlier. Okay, that's going to be a challenge. So, you know, if I think about those job transformations, think about law, healthcare, finance, where you're going to see AI just doing a lot of the repetitive stuff. Okay, but if you think about it, those same areas are going to need things like data analysis, AI-driven cyber skills, creativity, critical thinking. Notice the terms I'm using, they're all not disciplines in the sense of, you know, match a skill to a job. They're more match a characteristic of a person to the need. And I think that's the kind of transformation we're going to see more and more and more of, okay? But then you're also going to see new jobs. That's just totally new, different jobs. You know, things like AI maintenance, AI development. You're going to see things like AI ethicists. You're going to see AI trainers. You're going to see data, I don't know what we're going to call them, data annotators, data labelers. I mean, there's an entire industry that's going to have to emerge around pruning the trees constantly of all of this knowledge that these things are just going to keep learning and improving and learning and improving and learning and improving. And that these are all, we don't know, they're going to be lots of jobs in those areas right now. You know, the current thinking is things like prompt engineering is going to be hugely expensive. I mean, if you're a really good prompt engineer right now, it's actually a really, really valuable skill, very highly paid skill. So, you know, all these sorts of skills and competences are just going to emerge. Okay. Now, I think the thing that will affect our world a lot is the job categories that are being created might not necessarily be easy for people who are being displaced to transform into. Okay, and I think that's where I think we have a real challenge, maybe, with, I'm talking about societal, right? This is, I think, where some of the bigger picture, you know, we need to slow it down. It's too much. It's too fast, you know.
So, Phipps, let me talk you through a practical example so people can think it through. So if you're someone who is in procurement, supply chain, I'm going to procurement and supply chain in that area.
All right, let's go there.
And, you know, you're good at processing invoices, you're good at paying invoices, you might create POs, you know, all of that kind of stuff is pretty repetitive until you get into the complex deals, until you get into the complex supplier relationship networks that are out there. So what's going to shift is the repetitive nature of, hey, you know, once you've got a PO and the supplier has provided the service, if it matches what's in the PO, let it go. No human intervention required. So then it frees up the space of the value add activities from the customer's perspective of, you know, help me think about navigating this complex deal that I'm trying to make that has different benefits to our organization beyond just the service. Help me think of this in a broader way so that it has a broader implication to how we're thinking about perhaps sustainability or how we're thinking about growth of our skill set, or, you know, whatever it might be, depending on the supplier ecosystem, and help me manage really complicated network of suppliers and how to get more value from them in different ways. Now, that's hard for someone who's processing invoices and POs to shift into, because it's not a, well, here's a bunch of things you can go and do, because it requires all those skills you've just mentioned.
Yep. This is conversations over Zoom, or I actually played with the Apple's Vision Pro yesterday, right? That's pretty amazing, right? So however you're going to interact, whether it's having lunches, dinners, meetings with customers or vendors or whatever, getting on flights and going out to, you know, across your supply chain, you know, there's things that humans can do that AI won't be able to do. But even in your example, You know, if you think about if your AI systems are automating those sorts of things, then they're also going to become really good at predicting where things go wrong. So you're going to get an entire amount, a whole new generation of, hey, we've noticed these 10 things keep happening over and over again, and I think the fix for this is X. Do you want to, like, you know what I mean? Like there's a productivity that I think is available through the what data. The AI tools now enable you to do that goes way beyond it just does what I told it to do algorithmically. And so, but your example is spot on. And what you just described, that is a totally different set of skills. Yeah, that is it's not just a different set of skills, it's a different mindset. It's a different mentality. It might be a different college degree. It might be a different set of, it might not be an easy transition to make. So the question really is, you know, we don't know this, okay? But maybe other types of jobs in the economy increase. Like we know, for example, that, you know, trades, plumbing, electricians, it's really hard to get a good, you know, general contractor, plumber, heating person, you know.
Hairstylist,
right? Whatever. I think what you'll see is a lot of, occupations and life choices will probably start moving towards things that machines can't do, at least not yet, right? Yeah. Until we have robots that will cut your hair and so forth, which will probably come down the road as well, okay? But you know, I think there's that kind of, you know, I don't know. I haven't really looked too much into the research, but I think we're still trying to quantify or know, you know, what would be transferable, what isn't. I think the researchers and think tanks and futurists are spending more time on this sort of stuff. But I do think the economic data, that's why it's got, you know, that's why we know it has a profound impact, because we know it's going to impact a lot of jobs and a lot of people. And, you know, we're in the US, for example, you know, our safety net is not particularly high from a, you know, you lose a lot when you don't have a job. And that, you know, that has the potential to sow a lot of civil discord in a country that's pretty volatile already anyway. So, you know, I think when you add those things together, you know, this is kind of why the you know, this isn't just a nice chatbot that teaches me to do something. The higher order consequences are pretty significant, you know?
So that's the what we'll call the commodity expertise that's going to change significantly. What about at the other end, where, you know, we have someone who is highly paid, high expertise, more of a, you know, complicated domain that they work in. Like, what happens to that end? You know, your technical architects, your highly skilled senior engineers, your R&D folks, your scientists, your, you know, the more of the college degree, more of the PhDs.
Yeah, I would call it more the information
all of these
workers,
different things.
Right?
The knowledge workers, information workers, that whole huge segment of the population as well.
Yeah, so yeah, I think it's good that you wrapped it down that way. So yeah, I think the transactional ones we talked about, right? That's just the new wave of automation that's coming, much like typists disappeared after computers, that kind of thing, okay? And that is what it is, okay? I think this category is probably, I think this is probably where in our world, because we work predominantly with professionals, this is where we're going to see the most pain, in our world. And you know, it was funny, like, you know, you and I, you know, we've sat down and, you know, we have to coach people through this and work with leaders through this. And I'm not doing it justice, but the way I simplify it is, I think everyone should do a little bit of an assessment, really, self-assessment on if I step back, how much AI risk do I have based on my job, based on my work, based on what I'm earning, okay? And that leaves me with this, the three criteria. If you are yes to all three of these, okay, then you probably should be a little bit nervous, or at least have some butterflies in your stomach that says you need to do something different, okay. And that first one, you kind of alluded to it earlier. That first one is if you have high expertise that's very narrow. So I'm a brilliant coder in a particular framework or a set of skills. I'm a great analyst, or I'm a good trader. I'm a good writer. I'm a good, you know, where you have a core discipline that you might be really, 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 really good at, okay? But is also something that generative AI does pretty well today, because pretty well today is going to be better than you 6, 12, 18 months from now, okay? So that's so if your expertise is very narrow and that's what you're, that's how you've built your professional identity, okay? And you don't have too much else, okay? So historically, we've had people with high expertise. They're really, really good at those sorts of things I mentioned, but they might be, you know, the emotional intelligence might not be very good. They might not be great around people. They might not be good at managing others, but they're brilliant at what they do. You'll see this with designers as well, by the way. You'll see this with artists as well. You'll see this with, you know, any of those. They're great things, but they're narrow. So if you've got narrow sets, criteria number one. Okay, if you then add that criteria number one to your, the domain itself, like the problem area that you work in is complicated, but not chaotic, not highly, highly, highly complex. So meaning it's easy to apply some kind of best practice or some kind of known method. So generally what we have is those people that are truly high skilled in those areas tend to be very good at applying certain sets of methods, certain types of methods over and over again. They might be complicated methods, but they're methods, okay? So when they're operating in this domain that's just, you know, it's hard, but it's solvable. It's not hard and unsolvable because human beings do weird things, okay? They're still pretty definable and manageable, almost in the way that a scientist or an engineer thinks, okay? So that's a complicated domain. Not too simple, but not highly chaotic either, or highly complex either, okay? And then the third characteristic is you earn a lot of money. and that's because the market is really, really, really good at finding ways to pay people less if other types of supply become available to it. So from an AI point of view, if you have those three categories, that makes AI kind of very good at being able to either displace or be able to do a lot of the legwork that constituted those sorts of areas. So what's going to happen is that skill set, that thing, is going to either become cheaper or you're going to have to transition into something else, which, you know, it's unpleasant. People are going to feel like they're being asked to take demotions. They're going to feel like their promotions are going away. They're going to feel like, why doesn't anyone see the value in what I used to do? All of those sorts of things are going to compound. And that's going to be the category of employee that I think we're going to have the greatest work to be done from our perspective, because these are highly valuable people, highly skilled people, but they also probably see themselves as experts in something, and the value of that expertise is going to diminish, and that's not a great thing.
So Vips, if we think about, you know, a senior data analytics analyst, this would be someone who's well compensated, complicated problems that they have to solve, but they are solvable. How could they be thinking about evolving their career?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's really two categories down this road, right? You either look at it as like, I need to move from one set of narrow expertise to another set of narrow expertise, but one that is out of reach of the current evolution of AI for the next, whatever, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. That's a gamble. That's a gamble. It's hard to predict, but that's one option. And I think the purists would probably prefer to go down that kind of road. The purist engineer, the purist mentality would like to go down that road, probably. The craftsperson mentality would like to go down that road. I mean, the second category is rather fortuitous for us, because I think what it does is it shines a light on building fabulous skills, building adaptability skills. What we think of as EQ skills, how to relate to people, how to adapt, how to learn fast, how to learn new things and apply them in a way that creates value quickly. All of those sorts of skills, critical thinking, relational aspects, whether it be customers, whether it be vendors, whether it be other team members, how to galvanize inspiration, all of these sorts of things are the other way to go. That is probably a better path, certainly from a long-term growth, long-term career, long-term income point of view. But that's also the kind of thing that does require a lot more rewiring of the way you think, the way you behave. To use our language, that's only going to work for the fabulous few. Okay, the ones who truly aspire to that and have the fortitude and the disposition to want to go down, and the commitment to go down that road. And I think that road is the one that, it's without doubt the safest, but it's also probably the hardest one. And I do think that the professional environment is going to have, this is going to be a thing. This is going to be a self-reflective moment for, all of these folks. And the reality is, I think that's what a lot of people are going through as a function of being, unceremoniously let go. I don't know if you watched some of the TikTok videos recently of people recording. In the end, the economy is going to do the tough decisions. And whether that's done in a graceful way or in what I would say a fabulous way, or whether it's done in a overly efficient, clumsy kind of robotic way, either which way, those individuals are still going to have to go through that circle of suck and decide how to adapt to that or reinvent themselves in a new narrow domain, which is likely to have a shorter and shorter lifespan. But I do think this is really, really tough. And my view is, we need to help the people who are experienced in their careers, but it's going to be harder for them. The ones earlier on in their careers, I think we need to get the right kind of advice and the right kind of help that they just don't get through their line management and their internal organizations because they're still trying to make everything fit to the machine that is the, let's call it the pre-AI organizational construct. And that's just not going to work because departments are going to be more fluid. Roles are going to be more fluid. I have a personal view that after your first few, 2, 3, 4, 5 years in your career, role descriptions could be pointless. They're not going to be helpful from the perspective of determining, who should be chosen for a particular role or a particular job, because the critical success factor associated with these fabulous skills, the adaptable skills, are going to be so strongly outweigh the ability to ingest and use AI-assisted expertise that the people who are true craftspeople, you will always need them, but you will need them in ever fewer numbers. And I think that's going to be something.
Sounds like a great topic for one of our next podcasts.
Yeah, it's a huge topic.
If we no longer need that, how do you think about career growth? And
how do you think about education?
And
how do you think about schooling? How do you think about, it's huge implications.
Managing, Yeah,
and even you take it even further, right? Which I enjoy doing. Okay, well, wait a second. We may have a hard time of this based on our definition in the US of what constitutes a good life, a good job, a good career, or whatever, right? But there's like 200 other countries out there where we could easily get leapfrogged in the way that we think about this. Okay, so This stuff, even after the Industrial Revolution, there were winners and there were losers, okay? Even after the Internet Revolution, there were winners and losers, okay? And you know what? There's going to be winners and losers from a national level, from a cultural level. There's going to be huge winners and losers that come out of this, okay? And the winners and losers will probably shape our culture probably for the next, 20, 30, 40 years. And so this is kind of what why people get freaked out, because the consequences are huge at every level but they're also easy to navel gaze around and just get baffled by. When most of the time, what we need to do is really take a step back and say, all right, then let's take a look at what's real, what's pseudo predictable, what are the things that I just need to be aware of, okay? And be, I mean, sufficiently fabulous and pragmatic in our approach. Otherwise, what we'll do is just drive ourselves nuts and raise more anxiety, more fear. And ultimately, that's not going to help us in our lives. It's not going to help our organizations. It's not going to help our families. And that's kind of why, I do think that we probably, when I mean we, I mean ThinkShift and fabulousness in the way that, I think we predicted that this was going to happen about 10 years ago, and now it's happening. And now the need for that kind of periodic shift it's just going to become something everyone's going to need rather than just the few. And I guess that's a challenge for us as well in terms of how do we and, companies and people and a whole army of people in our ecosystem who are trying to help with this kind of problem, how we figure out the human side of this while also recognizing the huge performance opportunities that it presents for everything. There is an optimistic side to it, but it is also not responsible to pretend like it's just another tool.
So as we kind of think about wrapping this up, so everybody, you would have heard, there's different ways to be thinking about AI. It's not simply the super intelligent Terminator style that we fear the most.
Not yet.
And if we can narrow down our thinking to the next 1 to 3 years, which is our fabulous view, then it makes it easier to wrap your head around. And you can either be scared and freeze, or you can see it as an opportunity in the promised land. And know that, like with all these changes, we saw it in the internet age, we saw it before that when computers came along, we're always massively short of the new skills that are needed, and they're just a little different. So this is not a time for you to rest on your laurels. Be proactive. If you are more in the repetitive, transactional work, to start to identify the higher level value add activities you can do from the perspective of your customers, start building those skills and really make sure you are focusing in on moving in that direction and automating everything that is repetitive, because your value will be seen. And for those of you that are in the more complicated, high expertise, highly paid domain, think about from those things, what is going to get automated and how do you start to shift and build your relational skills and your wider range of skills that is more related to navigating complex problems in a broader domain and helping others through connections, through the relationships.
I would like to add one thing, Vicky. I know many of the people we work with do this already, but I would say most subscriptions are a waste of money. And by that, I mean, they may be very entertaining, right? They may be very entertaining, but they're not going to help you prepare for this kind of revolution, right? So we got tons of Netflix, Disney Plus, blah, 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 blah. What I would say is if you're a professional, you really, this is a subscription you should have, whether it's ChatGPT, whether it's Gemini Ultra or whatever the new ones will be over the next, get it, start playing with it, ask it the kind of questions that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, if nothing else, so you can start getting a feel for how good these things are or how bad these things are relative to the area that you work in. Yeah, it is, and only because that familiarity will help you wrap your head around where the value is and where the human adds the value versus where the AI adds the value. And I'll tell you, that is worth whatever it is, 15, 20 bucks a month or whatever it is. I'd much rather have that subscription. Like someone says to me, Netflix, or if you can only have one, Netflix or GPT, I'm going with ChatGPT, right? I think everything starts with going from being unaware to aware and familiarization. And I think this is something, it's really easy. I mean, it's easy to familiarize yourself with it, but it's also very easy to have a personalized experience with it as opposed to just reading about it. And that's what I would recommend everybody does.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Thank you so much. We hope you've enjoyed this topic of our fabulous perspective on how to wrap your head around this and take it down into bite-sized chunks and move it forward. And we will see you again next time. Stay fabulous.